sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobic, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young, and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021.
I make my own self chuckle. let me get my shit in order. Okay, all right. Hey, welcome. Bienvenue to another episode of, you know, I should have checked the levels before I started this. They seem normal. Yeah, okay. Okay. All right, let's try this again. Welcome, bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, aka B Blizzak on Twitter and shutuppodcast.com on the internet. That's just my way of saying, you know, if you want to find my show notes, go to shutuppodcast.com. And if you want to holler at me, you could do that on Twitter or on the email address that I'll share with you later. But, you know. Whatever, the options are open here. All right, FYI, another FYI for new listeners and a reminder for returning listeners that Shut Up Podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green. And raise a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Gucci Blub! I'm representing and holding it down for black folks who grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City. On Much Music. This episode is being recorded on July 2nd, 2020, excuse me, 2022, and is brought to you by the letter F. F for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record labeled as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. This next part is not an endorsement. Like, I don't have, like, advertisers, but I'm going to add that this episode is also brought to you by Glenn Morangi. Is that how you pronounce it? The original? Glenn Morangi? It's Highland Single Malt Scotch Whiskey. Damn, that white man and his whiskey. Look, I know. I'm contradicting myself. I start the episode with Fuck Whitey, and here I am praising his whiskey. Well, all I'm saying is, you know, if the revolution were to go down tonight, I'm making sure we're preserving the whiskey barrels and the people we need to make it happy. Because, goddamn, I don't know what happened to me, man. All of a sudden, I'm into whiskey. Shout out to my homie who introduced it to me. And even though it's an expensive habit to develop, but it doesn't matter. Whatever. Okay. All right. Yeah. Easy on the bridge word, B-Black. Easy. Come on, man. Okay. I had to record this episode today. It's we're on a Saturday. It's the day after Canada Day. The title, which I'm sticking to it, which I'm going to stick to, is relationship status equals. It's complicated. Is in relations to my relationship with this country we call Canada. I'll get to that later, you know, the day after Canada Day, and, you know, I have moments of reflection. But before I get to that, I want to cover a few things, like first item on the agenda. All right. It goes, I put the it's actually a lyric from a song by The Commission. Is it The Commission or Commission? Whatever. It's a gospel group. And I don't know if y'all familiar with it, but Fred Hammond used to be part of that gospel group, And Tide of Pain and I Don't Like Fear is a portion of the verse. Now, the reason at the beginning of the episode I laugh is because I just wanted to focus on that part of the song, but completely didn't pay attention to the whole song. And the whole song is about, you know, I guess being the prodigal son coming back to God. You know, in every Christian's life, you have these moments of where your faith is like low and you're starting to question God and shit like that. And you're like, you're probably like Jesus on the cross going, God, why the fuck you forsake me? And the song, from what I can tell by the lyrics, is that it's coming back to Jesus. The reason I laugh is because when I make myself chuckle because A, I didn't check the lyrics. And if this was like a high budget podcast, I'd be like cursing out the person in charge of researching, which is me. It makes me laugh. And the reason I bring it up is because I remember, shout out to my cousin Boo. She's a practicing Christian. And she's probably the one relative who I've gotten real about my status as an ex-Christian. And for someone like her, she believes what I'm going through is just I'm just having a moment of weakness, and it's just a matter of time before I'm like coming back to get back on the right path of Jesus and shit like that and whatever. And who knows, you know, whatever. There are smarter people who knows, whatever. But I believe that the stance that I'm in is worse than that. When I proclaim being ex-Christian, I'm actually saying I'm done. Fuck white Jesus and his motherfucking religious. Fuck that cracker Jesus and his religion. I guess what happened is the concept of, it's not that I don't know. It's not that I necessarily have gone atheist, or maybe I have, but it's the idea of a creator, especially a white one. Like, you know, sure, God might be black, but then if he's black and he fucked us over with the slave trade, like, you know, the idea that God is black and he fucked us over like that and he favored white people, it just messes with me. So I guess the idea of this all-powerful being in the sky looking on down to us, it feels primitive to me now. It feels like the best I could do is, if there is a God, this motherfucker is like, figure it out. He's like, how do I say this? It's like you planted is it a cactus that doesn't need to be taken care of? It's like he planted a seed, created life on earth, and then he said, figure it out. Good luck, homie. Good luck. I don't think he's on standby waiting for prayers. And even if he was waiting for prayers, how's he going to like bend the, like, how are you going to, dude, you know, I need, you know, it burns when I pee. Not really, not right now, but it burns when I pee. Now you want me to pray to say, hey, make this burn go away. You know what I mean? This shit doesn't make sense. It just don't make sense anymore. Anyways. Yeah. I guess this is a complicated conversation, but I just, wow. Okay. I'm getting off track on this whole, cause I could do a whole episode on my status on an ex-Christian. And I spent more time than I was supposed to on that part because it made me laugh. But the reason I chose to capture this specific verse, Tide of Pain and I Don't Like Fear, is because even though I'm in the status of ex-Christian, I still listen to gospel music. I just don't pay attention to the lyrics. I don't know if that's like saying, hey, I watch porn, but I don't, you know, look at the new part. I don't know, whatever. But I'm saying I just don't listen to the lyrics because I still connect to the beautiful music. It's the emotion that it stirs in me, and it's always been my go-to when I'm feeling down. It's like when you need music to lift your spirits up, I need like that kind of music. Like if I had my way, I'd say, hey, yo, sing that gospel, do your music, but cut out that Jesus reference. If I had my way, which is not right. But I'm just saying that I still have a connection to the music and the artist. Like, I remember going to a Kirk Franklin concert and seeing a friend there. I'm like, damn, you went to the church? I said, nah, man, I don't have to be in the church to enjoy the music. Like, I'll tell you this, man. Gospel singers, they're artistic. They'll tell you that, oh, we're divine. Not divine. They'll say we're anointed or we're not making music. We're making worship and shit like that. But overall, them motherfuckers are making actual good music. And the fact that they believe they're doing it for their creator makes it probably the reason why it makes it even more powerful. And the other thing too about gospel music is how they say shit that you need to hear, like I'm tired of pain and I don't like fear. Now in this particular circumstances, in the whole space-time continuum, I remember when I heard that verse, and I'm thinking of the space-time continuum, and I wondered, I think the writer of the lyrics, I wouldn't be surprised if it was Fred Hammond, but the point is I was thinking of Fred Hammond, and I was thinking about how talented this individual is. Like, this dude was born to sing, to make music. Sure, gospel, whatever, but this man is a talented human being. I've seen him in concert, and wow. Anyways, and I take for granted to how good he is. By that I mean, sometimes it feels like homeboy just shut out the womb and started to sing. Like he was gifted from the beginning. Like there was never any doubt on his part that, man, this shit, like, I don't know if he ever had his moments of his first time on stage and he's like, yo, I hope these people like it. Oh, damn. Like, I hope, oh man, like whether he had to get out of his comfort zone to make that kind of music. It's as if the talent just came to him and he was like, yeah, I'm motherfucking Fred Hammond. I'm about to make some music, put these words together and assemble all these notes and shit like that. And people are going to like it. You know, I'm curious to look at his biography to see how he came about doing what he did. But what I was thinking, going back to this whole, to the why I referenced the space-time continuum, and really what I'm thinking of probability, is I wonder whether when he wrote down that lyric, tired of pain and I don't like fear, whether he knew I'd be going for one of my lowest lows. I don't know if it's my lowest lows, but I'd be going for one of my lows. And I would hear that part of the song and it would like send my spirit in a different direction. Like it would be uplifting. Like it was like the timing is, you know, ever walk in on some friends and they're like, holy shit, they're shocked that you just walked in because they're like, we were just talking about you. Whether they're talking about you in a good or bad way isn't irrelevant. What I'm saying is the timing, or you're talking about someone and they just happen to show up. You know, that timing is just like cosmic. You want to say it's like, most people say it's coincidence. And some people believe that, nah, motherfucking God planned that shit. When God created the world, he fucking worked up this math, this complicated equation that verse and your mood would intersect at this exact time and you'd be feeling in a better way. Like, I was just thinking on whether he knew. You know, I had that same feeling about Nas when he made Illmatic. Illmatic to me is like greatest, one of the greatest contribution to humankind. It's a dope-ass album, that's what I'm trying to say. Sometimes I've accused Nas of that he didn't write that song. Like God, some angel ghost writ that, like something supernatural, like aliens created that album, like spoke to him in a dream and he wrote the words after. That's how dope it is. But I think about how, whether these people knew that people would enjoy their art or whether they just made their art and like, who gives, whatever, what happens, happens. There's a clip of Drake, where he talks about releasing his album and putting it out into the world. And I loved how he uses the word he surrenders it. Did he say surrenders it to the world or surrenders it to the universe? But he just lets it go. Because part of it is, once you know, he released an album recently, and it was a lot of help. Basically, it got a lot of criticism for it, but it got a lot of praises for it. And I think about how, yeah, the idea of surrendering. While feeling good about myself, while remembering that, hey, I felt bad and I felt better because of this one verse, I was wondering whether these artists knew that was going to happen. Or whether they just had, or they had this confidence that, hey, I like it, which means someone else might like it. Like, they didn't know they were going to be these talented artists. Some people say that. Yeah, I've always known, like Kanye. Kanye, like, was one of those people who believed in himself. And, did they have that belief? I think of, birds when they chirp. Birds out there, chirp, chirp, chirp. You know what I mean? I don't know. Have you, you know, fallen asleep, you know, you're been awakened to a motherfucking bird that won't shut the fuck up? Like, did that bird intentionally try to wake you up, or was just like, it was just natural? I just gotta, like, chirp, 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 chirp. Gotta do my thing. I just gotta do, you know, whatever. I ask all this because I think about how much I enjoy doing what I'm doing right at this moment. Record, like, it's me sitting down, got my headphones. Damn, I forgot to take a picture. I need to document this thing, right? It's me, this headphones, and this microphone, this expensive ass microphone, and I'm recording, and I have this script that I created. Like, I enjoy doing all this. Like, I'm actually, as I'm speaking, I'm starting to realize, because I didn't realize where I was going to go with this shit. I'm probably going overtime that I've holy shit, yeah, I'm going overtime that I allocated for this segment. But now that I'm here realizing what I was trying, like, yeah, when I originally conceptualized this, thought about this segment and wrote it down as an agenda item, I didn't know where I was going to go with it. But now that I realize what I'm trying to say, I'm like feeling myself. I'm actually feeling good about myself. But after this, I hit record. Oh, yeah. After I hit stop and upload and everything like that, I'm going to be overwhelmed with self-doubt with, yo, this is crap. This is bullshit. The fuck were you thinking? Like, I'm like my biggest enemy, man. I'm going to get to that in this week in therapy. My biggest enemy, like my biggest critic. He's not just my strongest critic is, like, I'm putting up my head right now. My mind, my dome, he's inside. I said he's inside. She's inside. I don't know if my critic has a gender. I'm not sure. All I know is a motherfucking asshole. But yeah, he's there telling me, shut the fuck up. No one's trying to hear that shit. You ain't no Fred Hammond. You ain't no fucking Nas. Maybe Nas, but you ain't. Like, shit is garbage. Ain't no one trying to hear what you're trying to say. Just give up, man. Fuck. Get high. Get drunk. Drink more of this fine whiskey that the white man made for you. Hey, puts hair on your chest. Anyway, woohoo! Gotta get it right, buddy. Yeah, anyway, yeah, so the last item I put, yeah, did they know it was gonna be powerful? Sometimes I wonder whether this shit is like finding love. I think one of my biggest handicap is the belief. Now, okay, I wanna be careful. Usually I don't say these things out loud because some well-intended human being is going to come out and say, no, no, you don't think like that. No, it's okay. And blah, blah, blah. And being me, I'll comply to their request to not think like that and just let it fuck with me in the back of my head. But what's fucking with me in my head is the belief that there's someone out there made for me. Holy shit. You know what? Okay. Maybe it might not even be romantic, but there's someone out there that if me and this person got together, we would create magic. Whether it be romantically or whether, you know, okay, preferably romantically, but I'm just saying, no, you know, okay, I'm going to stick to the romantically because friendships seem to be easier than romance. But the idea that someone is out there and their existence would complement mine, Even more better, my existence would complement theirs. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I guess, like, the couples who are in love, like I don't want to talk to you fake motherfuckers. No, not the fake ones. Not the Hollywood marketed power. The sincere shit, like the what life is like, nature, like what life is all about. The actual couple who got together. The idea that someone was just their true self. Two people who were the true self, made up, no motherfucking gimmicks, no, hey, five ways to pick up chicks, no Axe body spray, no fucking popping bottles. You didn't do anything impressive. They were just themselves, and y'all connected and became a couple. Like, that idea. You know, I don't know, hold on a second. Because now I'm thinking about how monogamy, you know what, okay, I'm going to complicate. I was going to get into the rules of monogamy, like maybe the person who I'm not, if there is a person out there, she may not be monogamous, but then again, would that make sense? Okay, look, holy shit, I'm off track. But I guess I'm just saying is, whether creating art that the masses will enjoy is like finding love. That's really what I'm just asking. Is it like the same thing? Because you believe in this art. You have this strong, yeah, you believe in the art that you created, and you believe that someone out there will appreciate it, will enjoy it, will get something, will flourish from, will be better because you shared it, as opposed to you keeping it to yourself. All I know is I'm kind of hoping that, you know, I can find that kind of, like, I could do that from the things that I create. Yeah. All right. Okay. Next subject, because I'm going to, way over budget on this one. Okay. A lot of time, because I plan on a lot of time dedicated to my complicated relationship with Canada. But, okay. So, this week in therapy, you know, I wasn't going to actually bring anything up. I wrote three things, pretending to be okay. Oh, okay. See, here's the thing about therapy, right? I enjoy something I've always liked, even before I knew it was a thing, is analyzing myself, being self-aware, learning about myself. Yeah, it's just a thing of me, you know. I just like, go figure. Wow, okay, so not bad for a guy who's constantly self-hating himself. But I do like treating myself like a, how do you call this? Like a gadget. Like I'm writing the instruction manual for my own self. I like learning new things about myself. Not that I'm fascinated a human being. I'm just curious, just sheer curiosity. And, right. Well, I go to therapy. And what I enjoy about therapy is how it helps me. It enhances it. I thought drugs did that, but no. When you have a therapist you can talk to, you have the kind of conversation that helps you grow that knowledge that you have about yourself. You have I don't know if I want to call him an assistant, but yeah, someone to help you write the instruction manual. Someone who's, it's not that they're more knowledgeable of you. It's just like, they just know how to guide you in a direction to help you see things that you may or may not want to see about yourself. And sometimes you just discover things during the session, and sometimes you discover outside of it and stuff like that. Yeah. I want to establish that. Would you look at the therapist as Morpheus was to the one? No, not really. I guess I want to put in the emphasis that the work, the sweat is more you. The therapist is more like the guidance. They're like, hey, go that way, left. No, you should try. I don't know. Influencers. That's how it's been for me, right? They're like influencers. It's not like, let me put it this way. I guess I put a lot of emphasis in this shit because I remember I found a lot of preachers, self-help gurus, fake-ass prophets. I don't know. I keep whistling when I say the F sound. What? Okay, I got to get that checked. Something's wrong with my teeth. Anyway, yeah. Self-help prophets who make it sound like, yo, You need to go through me. I'm going to help you be a better version of yourself. I've dealt with those people, and it doesn't work that way. There, okay. I got this from Stephen Covey. I think it was Stephen Covey. But, like, the real teachers aren't people who put things inside of you. The great teachers, they're the ones who get it out of you. That's what therapy allows you to do. Not just there, like a real mentor, a great mentor, or the best teachers or guides, they're not people who like throw thoughts inside your brain. Here's the Bible, a la Jesus. You know, here's the Bible, get it inside your head. They're like, they bring it out. They help you become the gems that's inside you. They bring it out. Anyway, holy cow, man, I'm going off topic. Okay, so the item that I put is pretending to be okay. I was just thinking about how, so out of the result from the last therapy session, my thoughts started to think about how maybe I'm not as different from others as I think I am. Hold on, I gotta mute this. I leave my phone on like that just so you guys will think I'm popular. I used to, you know, again, Combat Jack Show or the Breakfast Club, and everyone left their phone on, and it's like beep, 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 beep. Anyways, it's stuff like that there. Yeah, where was I? Sorry, my homegirl just made a proposition. That came out wrong. Is about to do something, and I'm tempted to join them. No, hold on, man. Come on. Commit, man. Commit to the bit. Commit to your audience, man. All right. I'm recording a podcast, and I'm already going over my budgeted time. Okay. So pretending to be okay. Yeah, I'm not too what I'm getting at is I don't think I'm alone in the people who walk around and pretending to be okay. Pretending like life is just a chore. And if death were to show up in front of them and say, you know, and give them an option and say, hey, time to go, they'll be like, where the fuck have you been? Let's get the fuck out. There's some people, if death showed up to their door, they, you know, they put up a fight because they're probably thinking of their kids. Sorry, I make my own self laugh. No, it was just the idea that some people think of their kids and they're like, fuck, thank you, God. Thank you, death. Let's get the fuck out. Fuck them kids. Daddy's going out for smokes. And death just takes him away. No, I'm just saying there's some people, I guess they have like a strong will to live. My will to live is pretty much, it's just fear at this point. It's just the fear of being on the other side. Like, you know, if a gunman were to show up and, you know, put a gun in front, I'll freak out. If I'm on a plane and that motherfucker's going down, I'm not going, hey, hi, way to hell. I'm freaking out. I guess I'm fighting to live. Or at least, yeah. Yeah. Okay, you know what I mean? Hey, please. It would suck if there's a contract. Sorry, I'm thinking of a scene in Fight Club where Tyler Durden and the main character. Fuck it, man. If you haven't seen the movie at this point, then spoiler alert. Anyways, they show up to a corner store and they pretend to rob the corner store. And Tyler Durden is making a point, and he said, what did you want to do? Like, he's got a gun to this dude's head, and he makes it look like he's about to die. And he says, what did you want to do before you worked in this shitty-ass corner store? I forget the details of the story, but the overall point is, he said, I think you want to be a veterinarian or something like that. And then Tyler Durden says, this is what's going to happen. You know, I'm not going to shoot you, but you're going to enlist, go back into school. Basically, follow your dreams, asshole. That's what he did. And then and homeboy just did it. So it's kind of like, I guess I'm saying if I was face to face with death, yeah, who knows? After peeing in my pants, maybe my attitude would change about life. But right now, as it stands, I'm one of those people who are just like, strolling in through life, and I'm dragging my feet like it's like that shitty job that you just tolerate. Life is just that thing that I'm tolerating until I don't have to tolerate no more. Which I guess is a sin. I guess, you know, it's not a, okay, look, because I'm judging myself. I'm just trying to acknowledge a thought. And who knows, part of this growth, because, you know, I'm journaling my growth. Who knows? Maybe a few podcasts from now, I'll be like, life is worth living. I'm high on life. But yeah, I'm saying I'm not that guy right now. I'm that guy who's constantly needs to find ways to be like, oh, fuck, who drags himself out of bed and, drags himself out of bed, just spends most of his time bored. And I won't lie, though. One thing's for sure. I will say this. Once I'm recording these podcasts and publishing it, even though it's not going to a public, I am kind of enjoying life. Like, you know, if death were to come to me, like, you know, like, I would say, hey, can we wait after this podcast before we go away? I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Maybe that's what, you know what? I just realized something about myself. I guess I was about to say, it's like I was getting ready to tell you that I have suicidal thoughts. But they're not suicidal. They're just like, if death knocks on my door, I'll be like, come on in. You know what I mean? Come on in. And I think if you're one of those people who have those kind of thoughts, just admit it to yourself. You're not going to, I'm not saying, you know, just give into it. Just, you know, realize the state of your mind. How are you really? Like, are you really those people? Are you one of those people who are like, hey, I love life. Everything is happy and yada, yada, yada. But deep down inside, you're like Robin Williams type of shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's okay to be able to acknowledge those thoughts that, yo, life is like kicking my ass right now. So much that I want to talk to his homie Death. That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying, yo, life can be hard. It could take a toll of you. There's a rapper, French rapper, his name is Sopranos, and he says how every once in a while he needs to faire bouche à bouche. Is that what he's calling it? Bouche à bouche avec ma foi. Basically, I need to revive my faith. My faith keeps going down, and I have to like find ways to revive him or her or whatever. But yeah, you know what I mean? I'm just saying. By the way, that's what that was when I was telling you earlier on about how I was feeling. I was going through a low. It's so weird. I got out of therapy. I was feeling good about myself. And the next day, it just went down. I don't know what the fuck that's about. Or maybe I do. I just don't want to admit it. But what I was feeling was I was thinking about how, yo, this just felt like this life ain't worth living. What's the song? Running Back to You by The Commission came on my player. And that started to, hey, wait a minute. This song is not bad. You know what I mean? Like during that portion, if Def like were like to be like, hey, B, it's time to go. I'd be like, hold on. Can we do it? And after this song, you know what I mean? Actually, if Def came to my door, I would say, okay, can I get high before we leave? That would be like my, no, fuck that. I'm not, you know, oh, I want to see all my loved ones before I go. No. I want to get high. If Def took requests, before we go away, you can do things. You know what I mean? I'd be like, okay, I'm going all over the place. I said, I get high. But if I can't get high, I'm saying like, let me finish this song. And when I got to the verse, tired of pain and I don't like fear, that's where my mind like went into all kinds of places. And that's when I forgot that I was feeling down and shit like that. Yeah, pretend to be okay. But yeah, so this is what I thought that what happened to me after therapy. During therapy, I had a conversation with a therapist about where I realize, see, I have this thing where I struggle with saying nice things about myself. And I'm trying to avoid getting to the habit of, you know, hey, positive self-thinking and all that bullshit. You know, I don't do that. But I'm trying to get into the habit of admitting things about myself that I can say that, yo, that's as real as real. Like, I'm a dark-skinned motherfucker. You know what I mean? And it's something about myself that I don't hate, that I can accept about myself, that I'm dark-skinned. I don't have no qualms with that. It's that one thing. It's one of the few things about myself that I can look in the mirror and I have no qualms about being dark. Fat, on the other hand, is another story. But yeah, but dark skin, yeah, I can handle that. Anyway, so in therapy, I remember being able to tell my therapist how I could admit to myself that, yeah, I'm self-aware. Actually, before therapy session, I remember telling myself that, yeah, I'm a self-aware human being. That's what pretty much this podcast is all about. I'm like wondering whether someone else might be able to benefit from my ability, benefit from my ability to be self-aware, because Some of us comic. That's what comedians do is like, you know, ever notice when we just notice things and we share it to the world and people are like, yeah, I can relate. So sometimes I'm wondering if my ability to be self-aware might be able to benefit others as much as it benefits myself. But with that said is I also noticed that I police myself. That's something I guess I like about myself. But yeah, see the butt comes in. But the thing about the way I police myself is I over-police myself to the point that I haven't, what are we, this is episode 7 and I still haven't published. These podcasts aren't published. Who knows? I'm kind of hoping by the time someone listens to this podcast, they'll be like, well, you know, published. And me not wanting to publish will be a past problem. Like that will be my growth. That will be like you've like right now you're speaking to the version of B-Black who doesn't think it's a good idea to publish these podcasts. And yeah, so a part of it is these over-policing. It's like it's the one thing that I'm sure positive about in this world is doubt. Or I deserve to be policed. I need to put myself in check. And the thing about part of why I police myself to the extent of over-policing is I don't want to be like those. Like I think of I mentioned in the last episode how I saw this documentary called Abortion Stories Women Tell. And I was just thinking of this one woman. She was like on the pro birth movement. I don't use the word pro life anymore. It's like pro first forced birth. Pro bitch, spread your leg. That baby's coming out of you. That's what they are. Anyways, yeah, she was part of the. She's a Christian. Pro birth movement, and she was, and I was looking at this woman, and I actually believe she's on the right side, she's doing the right thing, and I think about how someone like her would benefit from do you check yourself? How do you not reach this conclusion? Okay, this world is complicated. I can't explain why she can't get herself to realize that, hey, I'm being an asshole by forcing these women to have babies that either they don't want or can't have. Whatever choice they make, you know what I mean? It should be a dirt choice. But, yeah, no, she's like, Jesus loves me. And, you know, and Jesus wants me to force these hoes to have these babies. You know what I mean? I don't want to be like them. I don't want to be like the motherfucker who's like overconfident in their opinion, and next thing you know, they're killing 6 million Jews. You know what I mean? I just like it's an extreme. I get it. You know, I know I have this bad habit of going from one extreme to another, but I just it's like I think the verse is pride comes before the fall, some shit like that. Basically, I've never seen good. Oh, okay, I'm about to contradict myself. I'm about to say I've never seen good things happen from people who were like too confident in their opinion. But then again, look at Kanye West. I'll get back to that. Yeah, man. Anyways, yeah, over policing. Another thing I got through. Hold on, let me take the sip here. Cause. Feeling good right now. Feeling good. Right. Okay. I have a marketing idea. Who I've decided that, okay, I am not going to do like the last time I did on the Old Testament, which is the nickname for the old version of Shut Up Podcast. By the way, that's the nickname, right? If you ever hear me say New Testament, I'm talking about this iteration of Shut Up Podcast. If you hear me say Old Testament, I'm talking about the old version of Shut Up Podcast. And if you heard the self-promotion. So if you heard the first episode of Shut Up Podcast, this is a plug. Anyway, yeah, first episode, I talk about how, like, I wondered if, you know, if white Jesus looks at the Old Testament and goes, God damn, man, holy shit, I'm a different person from that motherfucker. Anyway, so that's what it is for me, right? So in the Old Testament, oh my God, focus. Yeah, so in the Old Testament, in the old version of Shut Up Podcast, I just did what everyone did, you know, broadcasted my podcast to everyone who would be interested. shared it with all kinds of people. I even made up, printed some cards, and I passed them around, like business cards. And I thought it was so cool, and it had a QR code on there, so when you scan it, it would take you to the website. But basically, I promoted the website like I was giving around coupons, like I was a pizzeria, giving out flyers to all kinds of people. And of course, you know, I bet, you know, a lot of people probably made filters, used them for filters for their weed. Shout out to all you weed heads who understand what I'm talking about. But my point is, I don't know what the percentage of people who I said, hey, check out my podcast, actually said, I'm going to check it out. Some people did. But here's the problem is, some people did. And people who didn't understand what it was about, what I was trying to do, were also listening. I guess people, it wasn't made for. You know what? Okay. I'm going to take I'm going to call this a TikTok clip break. Because just to play this clip what's it called? By her name is, come on, B. Did you not write her name? Okay, I'm going to play this clip. And it's like some dope-ass words of wisdom. And it's just going to help me make my point on how I've decided to market, publish, who I'm going to share this podcast with. All right, let's start right now. I'm not taking a break. I'm not leaving. I'm just saying this thing is like 2 minutes long. So, yeah, stand by. Okay. Excuse me. I'm loading it. Valuable lesson.
Did anybody hear about the violinist? The one that was playing in the New York subway for about 45 minutes. And a lot of people thought that this person was talented. And they tipped him. And they tipped him in total after the 45 minutes. I think he had about $30. The vast majority of the public paid no attention to him and just obviously went about their day and pretty much ignored him. You might be like, why are you telling me this story? The reason I'm telling you this story is because that person who was playing in the subway for 45 minutes was doing a social experiment. He's a world famous violinist who goes by the name of Joshua Bell. His net worth is about $15 million. And guess what? He made less than $30 in that subway. Again, Jade, what's the lesson? So basically, what I take from that is that does not matter how mega talented you are and how much you have to offer this world, if you are in the wrong environment that undervalues what it is that you have to offer, your capacity will not be the same. Joshua Bell's capacity in the right environment makes him a multi-millionaire. In the New York subway, it made him less than $30. This is my message to you. If you believe you are special, if you believe you have a talent and your environment is not conducive in supporting your vision and in supporting elevating you and helping you thrive and grow and move in the direction that you know you're heading in, that is not because it can't happen. That is because they undervalue what you have to offer. And that means nothing. It really does mean nothing. It's time for you to decide whether that environment is an environment in which you can thrive and elevate and reach your highest potential. Mm-hmm. And if it's not, it's time to surround yourself with people who value you, what you have to offer, and it's time to make that stuff happen for you. If you know, you know. So let's just surround ourselves with people who support that belief, because you can find somebody in every stage of life, in every area of development, who supports literally any vision. So there'll be people who will bring you down, but there will be equally people who will lift you up.
I'm thinking about this whiskey that I'm... Wait, did I say whiskey? No, scotch. Holy shit, it's scotch. This is called scotch. Oh, man, shout out to you scotch listeners, scotch fans, or connoisseurs, and who heard me say the name, and motherfucker called it whiskey? Yes, okay, yeah. The white man who made scotch and the white man who made whiskey, they get a pass during the revolution. Oh, shit. Oh, I'm so sorry. The name of the author is JMS Wellbeing Center on TikTok. And I decided to follow her, follow this person, and because, you know, she drops these gems and shit like that. It's going to be a habit, whatever, right? But the only point, because I really need to get to my next segment. I'm trying to make it an hour and let your kids go for recess. The point is, help me find my audience. if you're one of the privileged people, I'm going to go with the word privilege, who I've chosen to share this, my podcast with, and you happen to enjoy it, please help me find an audience. Because right now, the only people I think about is everyone who's going to like diss it, who's going to say it's corny, the only or it's stupid, it's too long, it's too this, it's whatever, and shit like that. But yo, there's something she said in this, and maybe it's the scotch talking, but because I don't do this in even my therapy session, is I admit to myself that yeah, I actually do believe that I have a talent. And I do believe that I'm special. There's a part of me, it's a very small voice inside of me who actually believes that you're special. Everyone else is like, hey, this motherfucker's junk. Don't listen to it. Like, there's a minority government in my brain that's like, yeah, you're special. And I think, you know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe growth is I'll start to believe in my own shit and, you know, share it with it. But anyway, I'm just, if you want to... A, thank you for listening. We're not done, but I'm just saying thank you for listening. But at the same time, if you want to see some appreciation, let me know about people who would be in this kind of stuff. Because right now, the only people I can picture are all the people with strong opinions as when they don't like something. When they like something, they're quiet. But when they hate it, oh, they all let you fucking know. Anyway. Right. Okay. All right. Let's get to the main subject of this conversation. Fuck, man. I'm already 45 minutes in. Really? Okay. Anyways, I call it my Canadian identity. Yeah, it's complicated. My relationship with the country of Canada. You know, sometimes I say my country, and sometimes I say the country. And it's just I think. A lot of people who were born from parents who immigrated to a country, you know what, for the sake of context, I'm going to focus on Canada, who immigrated to Canada, their kids, not all of them, but I'm in the category of kids who struggled with what's my country. What can I say, what I can proudly, not just proudly say, sorry, not just proudly, but with confidence, be able to say, my country. This is where I'm from. Then again, maybe I'm, a citizen of planet Earth. You know, I'm comfortable saying, yes, I'm a citizen of planet Earth. But I don't feel comfortable saying I can't say I'm from Haiti because I wasn't born there. My parents are Haitian, but my parents, they were more religious than they were cultural. They didn't really pass on. They weren't big on passing on cultural identities, but they were more on religious identity. So it was me who just, you know, self-identified as a Haitian, even though the average Haitian would be like, Haitians are strict. Haitians show solidarity, but you know, but a guy like me takes. They show solidarity, but they will let you know when you fuck up as a Haitian. It's like, what do you mean you can't speak Creole? Or what do you mean you can't dance compa? What do you mean you don't know whatever artist, whatever this artist's name, or this fact, or that we eat this food? Or what the fuck do you mean you can't handle spices like the rest of us? You sure you ain't white? Anyway, yeah, you know what I mean? They hate, I don't know, I guess a lot of Haitians are just tough motherfuckers, and they figure that it's just a joke, you can handle it. Okay, yeah, what I'm getting at is I feel like the word when they say a man without a country. So what I'm getting at is, Canada Day is usually like, okay, you know, that's not fair. There was a Canada Day where I was like celebrating it with pride, but I'll get to that. But for the most part, it's been a complicated thing. I wrote the item, all my life I've had to fight. Well, you know, born from Haitian parents. So I'm black, you know, black kid. Trying to proclaim he's Haitian, you know. See, the thing with Canada is they let you know that they don't call it the Great White North for nothing. I actually have a joke about it, about how, even to complicate things, it's not only am I Canadian, I'm French-Canadian. I grew up with French-Canadian, so my first language is French. Now, French Canadian, I know, is like as a specific ethnic group, like the descendants of actually, you know, like the people from France who came here and violate and you know, stole this country. But I, what I'm saying is, but I still have like an attachment. Like, that's who I grew up with. Like, that was my community. Even though they call me nigger a lot, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, so I have this joke about how, you know, French community, they're like, you know, it's like, yeah, I have this joke where I talk about how I'm pissed off at finding out that there was black people in this country before me, before I was born. And not because they were there, but because white people have been convinced that I was the first black person they've ever fucking met. French, whether they were French or English. French, they're like, holy shit. They treated you like you were like a talking monkey. It's like, you know, hey, I'm black. You know what I mean? I'm black. Like, they're like mind blown. It's like, Manzi si kane piki souben. You know what I mean? Like it's, oh man. Like, the, like, it's gotten so bad that I expect it. It's gotten so bad that when I meet, let's say, a progressive French Canadian, I'm like, like, I'm shocked. I'm like, wait a minute. You haven't said the word nigger in, you made a full sentence and didn't use the N-word. Wow, what the? Like, I applaud shit like that. It's that bad. Like, my expectations got so fucking bad that it's like, it's like that Malcolm X saying, he goes, yo, they call me nigger so much, I thought it was my name. Yeah, French Canadians are like, man, they were like racist so much that it just became part of the French Canadian identity for me. But they were still my community. Like, I look at French Canadians like Ray Charles looks at Atlanta. It's like, it's racist as fuck, but that's where I'm from. You know what I mean? It's still, I still remember like my teachers, people I went to church with, the community, played hockey with. It all came, like, they introduced to me, Canada was introduced to me by French people. There's a reason why I don't know the Canadian national anthem in English. I know it in French, you know, I know off the top of my head, by heart, off the top of my head. But in English, yeah. And the thing too is, I go out of my way to not learn the English version because I want you to realize that, hey, I am not one of you. I am with them. You know what I mean? I'm with the French. I mean, she's Shaklif. Okay, that was a terrible accent. But yeah. All my life I've had to fight. So. And English Canada, they have their version of racism, you know. And yeah, that's what the joke's about. You know, I can't wait to perform that joke in front of an audience. But yeah, so I would get it from both of them. Like, both white people would find ways to remind you that, hey, you're not from around here. You're constantly, okay, you know what? In all fairness, I'm not saying okay, now I'm not going to give white people that credit. I'm not trying to say that everyone I met, every white Canadian I met was like, go back to your country, shit like that. No, I'm saying I could meet nine to be like, hey, welcome to Canada, you know, like, okay, the Canadians who I call friends, the white Canadians who I call friends are the ones who I feel like we're all part of the same family. I'm not saying they're kissing my ass or whatever, but they acknowledge my humanity as a black person. I don't have to lie about being black. I don't have to, you know, they don't say that, I don't see race shit. No, they get it. They understand part of my reality. And I just feel like we're all part of this great Canadian family. And we're all trying to get to a future that's better than what we went through. A future for the kids that was better that we went through. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, they're knowledgeable about black people, their struggles, or you know, the roles Canadians played, and you know, in like the fact that the slavery existed in Canada. Okay, sure, Canada wasn't a country when slavery happened, but you know, let's not fucking pretend like they didn't take from that. They're not Canada. They didn't spend money from 88. Didn't spend some of that slavery money to build the rest of Canada, you know what I mean? And, yeah, it's always been complex, so much to a point that I've never felt right. There's a portion of Canadians who make you feel like Canadians. Justin Trudeau is one of those people. You know, I was really grateful when he became prime minister, and he, in one of his speech, and he said, a Canadian is a Canadian is a Canadian. And I don't know, that dude, whatever, man, if he's the devil, cat, whatever the fuck you want to think about him, that man says all the right things. Like, you know, I don't expect much from a politician, but, you know, at least saying the right things, like, help. Hey, what about the fact you did blackface? Yeah, I mean, you know, no, he never got a pass from me if I'm doing the blackface. But the one thing that that he did do, and then white people do not understand, is he didn't try to gaslight us and say some bullshit like, no, what I did wasn't racist. You know, the fact that he came out and says, yeah, I did that. I fucked up. I, you know, it was a chapter in my life. I was ignorant. I was young, dumb, full of cum, and I put on blackface. Thought it was a good idea at the time and realize now that, wow, that I fucked up. Like, I see the growth in the man. Like, if he's going around right now in blackface, that's fucked up. But he's got me convinced that he's learned from that moment. Now, he doesn't give a pass. He's just like, look, like any other human being. Look, there's shit about my past that I'd be, that if it was released today, that I'd be ashamed of. But it doesn't. I had homophobic thoughts. I'm a misogynist as a motherfucker. Did I have island superiority? I don't know. Whatever, man. But there's shit about my past that today I've learned from. And that guy, before, the version of me before, is not who I am today. So I guess I see that in Justin Trudeau. And he's one of those people, when he says, this is your home, I believe him. You know, yesterday was Canada Day, and part of what makes it difficult to celebrate is, you know, the whole stealing of the land and genocide shit, you know what I mean? It's like, because I think about our my Native American brothers and sisters who, yeah, they went through some shit, man. They, like, holy shit. Like, I recently read the book, oh, fuck, how does it go? I say recently, it's, it wasn't that recently. It's 21 Things I Didn't Know About, let me write the title because I'm unprofessional like that. 21 Things I Didn't Know, I want to share if I got the right, the proper title, about the Indian Act. Yep, that's the one thing, because I remember numbers. Yeah, 21 Things I Didn't Know About the Indian Act, and the author's name is, I really need to get my shit, Bob Joseph. Anyways, I remember going through the stories and, like, mind explode. I felt the same way hearing the tales about, basically he just goes into the history of Canada and Native American, indigenous people, the indigenous population of this country, and helping Canadians make reconciliation with indigenous peoples a reality. Yeah. So I'm gonna, and whatever, man. But he just goes into the history. Shit I did not know. Like the atrocity Canada committed against the original inhabitant of this fucking continent. And of this part of, you know, North America that we call Canada. Like, you know, like Canada was a shit. Oh, man, it was disgusting, man. Okay. It's very similar to, like, I can understand okay. Indigenous people have the same relationship with the Canadian government that Black Americans have with the American government. Like, wouldn't blame if I was them, I'd be like, yeah, I'm not gonna trust you anymore. Yeah, another treaty, another deal, reconciliation. Word, that's what we're doing now. Yeah, you know, I understand. Like, they have every reason to not trust these people because they did them wrong. But somehow they managed to find the courage to be able to, like, okay, all right, let's try this again, cracker. Yeah, see, I don't know that reality, being born as from parents who immigrated here. Like, there's a comedian, another joke that I have, right, about his name is Don Kelly. Shout out to Don Kelly. And he's got this joke. He started out how it's just a joke, but, you know, he says, like, basically that him and I have arguments about how, you know, who suffered the most. And And it's not true. I want to go on record. There's no fucking way I'm telling an indigenous person that, oh shit, we suffered. I've never had those kind of conversations. But Don Kelly made a joke out of it. I made a bigger joke out of it. And the point of the joke is where I acknowledge the fact that this dude has suffered, has endured generations of dealing with the Canadian government. Like, his white man is the Canadian government. My white man is the French, the Canadian government. But Canadian government, you know, showed his ass. Like I felt its wrath in the 70s. Okay, you know, you can't break it down. We can't break white supremacy down like that because I feel like I'm giving white people it now. But I'm just, okay, when it comes to white supremacy, me, it's a combination of Haiti and then Canada. Him, he felt the full fucking strength of the Canadian, the full wrath of the Canadian government. That's what I'm trying to get at. I've gotten it since the 70s. He's gotten it since Columbus or Jacques Cartier or whoever the fuck. The first white man to land on this part and say, hey, I think we should move here. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So part of the whole Canadian identity is difficult to process because, come on, because, like, I feel like saying I'm Canadian, I'm, like, joining the people who, like, committed the atrocities against the indigenous people. Like, I really want to say, hey, I had nothing to do with this as I benefit from the atrocity committed on indigenous people. You know what I mean? It's complicated. That's what I'm trying to say. It's fucking complicated. It's complicated for me to say, hey, I am Canadian. It's difficult for me to, like, feel at home, treat Canada as a country. Like, the one time, I should say, okay, both the one time where my identity as a Canadian, like, was evident, like, it hit me like a ton of brick. It's like, oh, shit, ain't no denying. Oh, my God. The one time where I found myself saying, oh, I am Canadian! I had a born-again moment, born-again Canadian moment, and it's when I used to work in the States, Silicon Valley, Bay Area. You know, I shouldn't say this out loud because I kind of owe some people money out there, but blah, blah, blah. Anyways, yeah. I might edit that part out. Anyway, yeah. I used to live in the States, and so I was working with Americans. Funny, I was working with Americans, and some of these Americans were, like, you know, white, and the rest of them were from, I believe, Pakistan. Like, they immigrated to the United States. And they were on, like, a better visa than myself. I don't know what that's about. Racism? Anyway, yeah, better visa than me. And that's not the point. My point is, I learned a lot about myself working with these people, being on the outside, and what with these Yankees. As I remember hearing some of my coworkers were just, like, typing, and they were like, tabernacle, and I'm like, how the fuck do you guys know that word? And they're like, we got it from you. I didn't know this. Turns out that when I'm, like, coding in front of my computer, I tend to curse a lot in French, and I don't even notice that it happened, but it took these Yankees to point it out to them. But even more is what really made me go, holy shit, maybe I'm more Canadian than I thought I am, I mentioned the Pakistanis, Pakistani American coworkers, and one day one of the ladies, she just goes off and says, eh, like, finishes everything with eh, like, basically making fun of someone who talks like that, who, like, finishes their sentence like eh, and I remember being there wondering, hey, like, you know, wanting to jump in on the jokes and be like, hey, holy fuck, who's the Canadian fuck you guys are making fun of? I'm like, hey, you, Blackie. And well, it's funny because I didn't realize that I spoke like that. I thought it was like when Americans made fun of Canadians for ending their sentence with a, I thought they were talking about white people. I didn't realize they were, like, I talk like that too. Like, for me, and I realized, like I didn't realize, to them, I had a thick accent. It's funny. In Canada, people are like, wow, you sound American. In the States, they're like, yeah, nah, you ain't one of us. You are definitely not one of us. Because white people see me and I'll drop a few African-American vernacular here and there, city bonics. You know, I'll say a few things. Like, basically, I'll say shit that I heard my favorite rapper say. And in Canada, they're like, oh, wow, you must be one of them. And but in the States, they're like, you are definitely, your accent is fucked up, homie. Anyway, yeah. So, but I remember when they did that, having a moment where I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, and I remember, like, that was the moment, like, you know, I had, like, this big Canadian spirit. Proud to be Canadian moment, kind of thing like that, because I remember coming back to the States. I had gotten laid off. I was feeling down. Yeah, I remember getting laid off, and one of my American coworkers was like, oh, poor you. Okay, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, oh, poor you. I guess you're going to have to go back to Canada. And I remember getting ready to be like, yeah, poor me. I got to wait a minute. I'm not going back to a developing country. Apparently, you're not allowed to say, people say you can't say third world country anymore. I don't know what that's about, but whatever the fuck. I'm not going back to a third world. I'm going to a fucking country where I got fucking benefits, right? Because I remember going back and I got on POGI. POGI is like slang for unemployment insurance. I was resistant at first because I was like, what am I, poor? I was. But I went on unemployment insurance. And I can't remember. Shout out to the friend who talked me into going on unemployment insurance, because, you know, dude, you've been paying and you've been putting money into it. That's what that money is for. It was a beautiful feeling being able to come back to Canada, POGI waiting for me, and it just felt like I was being taken care of. You know, shit, that's the thing about Canadians. We take this motherfucking country, our benefits, for fucking granted. Like, there are people out there who think, who are like, mask mandates were like, oh, totalitarian, like Trudeau is a fucking dictator. And he's like, wear the motherfucking mask, or I'll kill you, or I'll fuck your wife, you know what I mean? It's like they're acting, and it's like they're not seeing what's going on in, is it Taiwan or China? Anyway, whatever. In China, they ain't fucking around, man. They shoot motherfuckers for not wearing a mask. Okay, I'm exaggerating, but I'm just saying, they're really ferocious over there. I think Korea too, like, it's like that. But my point is, in Canada's like that soft white parents that refuses to beat their child. Okay, how much am I? Okay, I'm going over time here. All right, it's like refuses to beat their child. So yeah, I'm just saying. Yeah, it's Canada. Excuse me, sorry, I was in the middle of saying. In that period of time, I was feeling patriotic. I was proud of my Canadian identity. I was proud of being able to say, I was proud of the fact that my birth certificate says Quebec. I mean, our birth certificate seals the deal that that I'm part of this country. At the time, I remember, what's his name? What the fuck was that? Stephen Harper was prime minister. I really didn't like that guy. Not to the point where I'd wave a fuck Stephen Harper flag and honk my horn in front of parliament. Not to that point. Just enough. I hated him to the point to like, whoo, I can't wait to vote. Like that much. I hated the guy. And what I hated about him is how he kept reminding me that he was one of those white people who are like, hey, you ain't from around here. Like he support a lot of the people who supported him were the same people who, when my parents tried to come into the country, they were, you know, people at the airport that were like, go back to your country. Okay, that didn't actually happen. But I'm saying is, it's like sometimes I feel like I was able to sense the racism my mom went through coming to this country while I was a fetus inside her womb. It's like I can hear the, hey, retourne dans ton pays, retourne dans ton Christ de pays, go back to your country. That's French for go back to your country. Like, I feel like I can sense that. Anyways, yeah. So the people who supported were the same people who are like, yo, don't let these Haitians come into our country. And once they did let us in, they made it feel like, you know, hey, don't get comfortable. You're just that motherfucking deadbeat freeloader sitting on Canada's couch right now. We don't need you. You need us. Like, you know, they made, like, teachers made me feel like You should be grateful to be in this country because you're, because the country you're from is a fucking, what did Donald Trump call it? A shit box. No, what do you call it? A piece of shit? Whatever. Whatever. But they made it sound like my presence in this country was just out of grace, out of the kindness of white people's heart. Had nothing to do with, hey, we look forward to you being paying taxes, contributing to the tax revenue, and we look forward to you taking up shit jobs, and we look forward to you helping others build their dreams, other white, you know, build their dreams while you stay at the bottom. What I'm saying, look, man, I'm just saying, they made it sound like the only reason you're here is out of the kindness of our heart, and the least your ass can do is work some shit job for us and pay these taxes. They didn't never made it sound like, hey, you're part of this great family. Like they said it, but they never made it. It was never like, it felt like it's a nice thing to say. Let's make them, you know, hey, bienvenue au Canada, but reste pas trop longtemps. Don't stay too long, okay? Go back and shit like that. Like I was like one fuck up away from getting sent back to Haiti. Yeah. So I'm just saying that, yeah, no. So my relationship with this country is very complicated. And I don't think I'm alone. I don't think I'm alone. Like, I'm not going to wish anyone a happy Canada Day. Oh, man. Okay. So, you know, I could go off on, I should, you know what? Okay. The people who I will wish a happy Canada Day are the people who are telling themselves, who can't get themselves to wish themselves a happy Canada Day. Like, the people who should be proud of themselves are the people who are not proud of themselves. Because they're thinking about the genocide. They're thinking about the unmarked graves. Like they're thinking about how, wow, okay, we did not live up. We did not live up to our, what's that word? To our standards. We didn't live up to our own. Oh, man, I don't know if it's the scotch that's fucking with my head, but to our own standards, to our own expectations. You know, like, look, man, look, I'm not saying, you know, white people should be going around feeling guilty and shit like that. No, we're all born into this country at this particular specific moment in time, and here's the circumstances. It was built on stolen land. The original inhabitant, they didn't get a U-Haul truck and moved out. No, they got killed. Free labor. A lot of crimes were committed. A lot of people got relied on. I think that's what capitalism meant, right? Had to step on others to make themselves, to bring themselves up. I'm part of the people who were stepped on to make it happen. Yeah, those people who are able to see Canada for what it really is, and it probably, I don't know what it's like to be a white person, but you know, I would imagine for some of them it fucks with their self esteem, it fucks with their self image. And I'm saying, look, I'm not. No, you shouldn't feel bad about yourself. You know, you didn't commit it, but you are. You are. Then, but is. Like, I'm not. Okay, look, I don't know how to tell white people how to live. But it's just like, I'm staring at this title, 21 Things You May Not Know About the Indian Act, Helping Canadians Make Reconciliation with Indigenous Peoples a Reality. In this book, homeboy just lays it on. He just does not censor anything. He says, look, this is the shit that's happened in the history of Indigenous people. This is the shitty shit Canada has done. And he doesn't, like, you know, censor it and whatever. And to the average white person, I'll be like, my feelings are hurt. Nah, man, tough it up, suck it up, man. You gotta learn this shit. I read it and it didn't make me want to burn down the country. Not really, but I'm saying it did. I love how he uses the word reconciliation. It's basically, yeah, no. Sometimes we gotta, like, destroy to rebuild. Sometimes the truth has to come out. Like finding out your wife's been cheating on you. The only way forward is, okay, it's out. Now that we know the truth, what can we do with it? Can we build and move forward? Like, those are the Canadians I wish a happy Canada Day to. The ones who are like, make me feel optimistic about the future. It's like, yeah, no, okay, the past is fucked up, but we're figuring out ways to move forward in a way that elevates all of us. I love those people. That's who I'm trying to end on a positive note. That's who I would wish a happy Canada Day and raise my alcoholic beverage to and smoke this weed with, smoke weed every day around with and stuff like that. But yeah, that's who I, anyways. Okay. I just explained what I meant by my complicated relationship with Canada. Did I talk about the injustice that against black people? I didn't get into that. No, that's another episode unto itself, but I'm going to end here because I hate myself for this. I went way over time, but I'm kind of hoping that I said some shit that made the time pass by as opposed to like, yeah. Anyway, it felt good. It felt good. I said shit that needed to be said, and I'm going to leave it at that, man. All right, this concludes today's episode of Shut Up Podcast. You can holler at me on Twitter at B Blizzak, or through my website, shutuppodcast.com, where you'll find the show notes for this for this episode. And email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. And until further notice, to subscribe, just use our RSS feed that's on our website. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcast.